today you want to talk about beliefs, I understand.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for us to talk about. So before we kind of get on to beliefs as such, though, it's important to know that we, as humans, we're bombarded with, you know, like the number varies between 2 million and 4 billion pieces of information a second.
What?
Yeah, so this would be everything that you could see. Like in this room, there's lots.
Yeah, we've got posters up everywhere. Yeah.
So you've got loads of different colours, loads of different textures. You've got lighting inside and outside the room. We've got, you know, me talking, all the sounds.
I guess it's
feelings, about you could feel your clothes against your skin when you think about it, you know, but you don't usually go around thinking about it unless you get something that's really itchy.
I guess that number is like, depends how detailed you want to go. Like there's a poster over there behind you and it's got colours, and okay, I can acknowledge the colours, but then I could acknowledge the change in the colour.
Yeah, and the writing.
The border around the writing, how thick is the border, the curves, is it a proper curve, is it jittery?
Exactly.
You could go crazy if you wanted to.
So what we tend to do then is when we
And you would if you paid attention, yeah.
Yeah, we pay attention to certain things. So we're only paying attention to, I don't know, some people say 7 plus or minus 2 bits of information. Some people say up to 2,000. But even if it's 2,000, it's still tiny, tiny proportion about what's actually available out there. And so what we're paying attention to depends on the filters that we have. So these aren't like little sieves that we have in our mind. It's the filters that we've grown up with. Because when we're born, we don't know that we're any different from our mother or father. We're all just connected to everything, and we don't know that we're individuals. We have to learn to be individuals when we get to about 18 months or two or something. You know?
It's like when we're a baby, we don't know that the noise we just heard was made by us or by something else.
That's right. We're all just connected, you know.
Yeah.
And so as we get older, our values, beliefs, things called metaprograms, memories are all part of how we filter this external information that's coming into them. And one of the most powerful ways that we do that is through beliefs. So beliefs can come from parents, but often there might be beliefs that we adopt ourselves because of a particular situation or a particular thing that happens, which doesn't have to be traumatic or anything like that, but we adopt a belief about ourselves, about the world, about life in general, several different beliefs. And then what happens is that becomes a filter. So we see everything through that belief. So then what happens is we go, oh, yeah, that it's happening again. That shows that it's true. So that becomes true. So that becomes our reality, which reinforces the belief.
Well, all these phrases that we have about you need to get real when we're arguing with someone, or we've got to face reality, there are many.
There are many realities.
Well, this is the thing, right?
Yeah.
Are those statements now meaningless? We've got to face reality. Well, we can't even presumably agree on what reality is because we're all seeing something different, even though we might be standing in the same place.
Well, we can do. We can probably, if we talk about it, we can agree on certain things, but we have to, you know, be in a position to do that where some people, you know, they just don't communicate very well, and so they think that what they believe and what they see is the truth. And so they're not that open to any other beliefs or other truths because they've got, like, reference experiences that their belief is true because they're seeing everything through that belief.
So what percentage of stuff going on what percentage of stuff in our experience do we actually take in and record, remember?
Well, it kind of depends on the situation. You know, in a emergency type situation, you might not remember very much because you're pretty scared. But in a, you know, like a learning environment that's quite relaxed, then you might take in more because that's what you're there for.
Yeah.
Having said that, in an emergency situation, you might just take in what you absolutely need to know to keep alive, you know?
Yeah.
So but the thing is with beliefs, though, is that they limit us a lot of the time. And there are some kind of, I suppose, universal type beliefs that people have. And so I'll read some of them out in a minute. But, you know, people go, oh, no, that's ridiculous. I don't believe that, right? Because consciously we don't. But remember that when we're a baby, we don't have the ability to be subjective about things. We just take everything in like a sponge.
Yeah.
Whatever anybody tells us, we just go suck it all up, and it just becomes part of us. And
yeah.
For the first 5 to 7 years of our life, And so it's only after that that we have the ability to be a little bit more objective. So I think we've talked before about how, you know, you can get a five-year-old, you can tell them anything. And they'll go, wow, really? You know, fantastic. Yeah. And then you tell an eight-year-old the same thing and they go, oh, God, what planet are you on, right?
Yeah.
Because now they've got they're an individual for a start off and they have the ability to be objective about things. And they've also got their own beliefs by that stage, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, so the beliefs then can limit us. And so one way to tell what the beliefs are is to notice what we do. How we behave, because our behaviour will reinforce the belief and it'll tell other people what those beliefs might be. So maybe if I read a couple of letters, because I've got a couple here that I've done.
It'll do the trick.
So let's have a look. So one is, you know, I'm not worthy.
Yeah.
Or I'm not good enough. So that's a very common one. I mean, you know, I've been coaching people for years and years and you know, I see this one quite often. Now, if you said to somebody, oh, you know, you believe you're unworthy, they're going to go, no, I don't. Most people will anyway, because they go, no, I haven't got that belief. But some of the behaviours then are seeking approval and harmony, but then rejecting, you know, the approval.
Oh, yeah.
Because when they receive it, it would contradict their belief.
Well, you see that a lot.
So you can tell them up until you're blue in the face, you know, oh, you know, you're really good at this, but they go, oh, no, 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 you know, anybody can. They just kind of brush it off.
Yeah, you'll deflect it.
Because if they said, oh, yeah, that's right, then the belief wouldn't be true.
But also it's a bit hard in our culture to say that. Someone gives you a compliment, say, oh, you're really good at that. You go, yeah, I am. That, like, that's kind of frowned upon in New Zealand.
Well, yes, because it could be very well almost a national belief. And then when you do get somebody that stands up for
themselves.
Interesting,
yeah.
You know, well, not stands up for themselves, but agrees.
Yeah.
You know, even like yesterday, I said my friend was looking for some, what do you call them, curtain hooks.
Yeah.
Anyway, I pulled up over the road and I thought, oh, the $2 shop will have them. So I went in there and I said, have you got curtain hooks? She said, yes. So then I messaged my friend and said, they got curtain hooks at the $2 shop. And she rang me, she says, oh, thank you, you're a legend. I said, oh, no. And she said, and so modest. I said, oh, no. Right. But it was a joke. Right?
Yeah, you deliver it as a joke.
Yeah.
But I'm really interested in this idea that it's a national belief that we're not good enough. Because we do behave like that.
Well,
there's all those news stories about we put New Zealand on the map. That's a phrase that I grew up listening to every time somebody did something important overseas. It put New Zealand on the map.
Right.
And
like we weren't on the map. We've fallen off the map before.
Well, actually, that has been a problem, but that's a separate issue.
I think it's more that we have shared values than beliefs. So we have a value of, humility.
Yeah.
You know, and the opposite of that is tall poppies get mowed down.
Yeah.
So if you start blowing your trumpet and going, oh, you know, I'm this good, then people just walk away and they go, what a so-and-so, you know?
Yeah.
But in America, it's different.
Yes, very
because
different.
Because self-promotion is very important to them. So, you know, there can be then a clash in values
if you
between
go there
one country and another.
If you don't tell them how great you are at stuff, they'll
think that you're leading them on. Yeah.
Yeah. You're
misleading them.
Yeah, actually, right. Actually, yeah. Not just that they'll dismiss you, but they'll think you're out to trick them.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
And yet, and the opposite here, you know, we go, oh, they're always blowing their own trumpet, you know, nobody needs to hear that.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
So, but that's more of a value than a belief as such.
And that's a value that's
kind of overlap.
And we always talk about phrases like cultural imperialism or just the fact that our TV's full of American shows and how America's exporting its values and culture, but that is one that it has completely failed to export to New Zealand.
Mm.
Even though we're so inundated with American culture, that one, that's not getting in at all, is it?
Doesn't seem to be, no.
Yeah. So anyway, I was just thinking that kind of clouds the issue a little bit about people like the belief, where were we? The belief
so
that
we're
they,
talking about the belief that, you know, you're not worthy or you know, you're not good enough or something. Often it's phrased as, you know, not good enough.
But certainly lots of people do.
Some other things that, so, you know, if that's one of the things that you do, like you seek approval, but then you reject it. Like, you know, you do something, you tell someone you've done something, like, oh, that's really good. And they go, oh, it's all right, you know, and brush it aside. Then that might be a belief that you have.
Yeah.
Another example is unconsciously arranging to be rejected as this proves that there's nothing about them worth loving. So people have got to really think about some of these and whether they actually do them or not. Taking steps to attract love and to belong, but this will often end up doing the opposite, because then it confirms the belief that they're not worthy or they're not good enough, you know. Taking everything personally. Everything they hear is about them. So this may manifest as extreme sensitivity or paranoia. How does this relate to me?
So what's
what
the belief?
What does this say about me?
What's the belief?
The belief is that I'm unworthy or I'm not good enough.
Okay, yeah.
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 So, and then what does it say about me? And then that again, that confirms the belief. Setting high standards and then punishing themselves relentlessly if they don't meet it, you know.
That's a self-sabotage situation, isn't it?
Mm.
Setting an impossible standard.
Yeah. So there's some other things as well. Doing things a worthy person would do, like being a good Christian and environmentalist. And so the person's worth is defined by looking at what other people consider to be worthy, not what they themselves think, because they're not worthy.
I'm intrigued by you grouping being a good Christian and being a good environmentalist together.
Because they're
two groups. Yeah, but they're two groups who feel almost at odds at times.
Right.
But the same dynamic, the same dynamic's happening, is just pointing in a different direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like what other people, so if you've been brought up in a Christian ethos, then being a good Christian would be important to the people around you.
Yeah.
Even though it may not be that important, but you're wanting to belong, you're wanting to feel worthy, so you're doing what you think other people want.
And same for maybe for environmentalists.
Yeah, yeah. It could be. I mean, I'm not saying it is, but it's like, your real passion, or are you just doing it because you think it's a good thing to do because, you know, somebody else has told you that it's a good thing to do?
I could see that happening in Raglan, because it's such a strong theme of our community.
Yeah.
People feeling compelled to give the impression.
To chip in and do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Another one is leaving situations such as jobs or relationships before people find out how unworthy they are or how.
Yeah.
So then the other one I said before is I'm not good enough. Compulsive trying or attempting to do something. The goal is to become whole through success and hard work. Anything that's done easily is suspect.
Yeah, that's a strong theme in our culture.
Mm.
If it came to you easily.
Yeah, well, it's like, well, what happened there then? It's like, I didn't even really earn that. You know, it just
doesn't
came.
Count. It doesn't count.
That's right.
Yeah. Overachievement. Yeah, well, but what are we counting?
What are we counting exactly?
Yeah.
Overachievement, like getting lots of degrees. Keep trying because they're not good enough. Well, they're good, but they're not good enough. So they're often perpetual students. This is one of mine. I'm always, as you know, I'm always on training courses.
Yes, Stephanie, have we got to the core of why you're here?
It says a lot of high flyers have this belief and burn out.
Yeah.
So they'll set up achievements that don't get acknowledged, and if they receive acknowledgement, then the belief would be contradicted.
I don't want people to acknowledge things to my face, but if they acknowledge things to other people...
Right, but then how do you know they've been acknowledged?
That works for me. You have to observe it somehow.
Right.
Convoluted way that it's that it works in my head.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really like compliments to my face, but if I hear you giving a compliment to someone else, that's...
About you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That works, because that's about that external approval thing.
Right.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now two people approve because of that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing with these people, they're always future focused. They're always rushing ahead. This makes the belief quite easy to see. Like, what are we doing a week next Wednesday? And lots of shoulds. Like, I should do this, and then I'll blah blah blah. Oh, I ought to do that. You know,
which is the opposite of being present, which we've been told these days is important for our mental health.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is about beliefs as well is that, you know, like people are listening and they might go, oh, that's me. It's like we've got to have some beliefs. But the thing is that they don't need to stop us from doing whatever we want to do in life. The idea is that we might notice the behaviour that we have and go, oh, you know, that's interesting. I'm doing that again. notice it, maybe notice what led up to it so that you can become more aware of it. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm not focused there. I'm focused over here on this thing that I'm focused on, that I want to do or I want to get. And not buy into it by reinforcing it all the time. So just being aware of it and aware of your own behaviour.
Yeah.
Awareness is a really key thing. Then you can often move past it. And then it'll come up again. It'll keep coming up, but you'll notice it.
I never liked the dynamic that I was like chasing approval,
right,
from people. Like, I got quite uncomfortable with it. It's not actually a comfortable place. Yeah, it's not a restful place to be.
No.
And so I tried to just make myself not do that.
Mm.
When I am on the radio, so I can't exactly claim that I'm not doing it at all anymore. But you know it. I do remember when I was younger feeling like I'm getting a bit frustrated with myself that,
yeah,
it wasn't that kind of a slightly tense dynamic of always chasing approval, right, from everyone around. Yeah.
Mm.
That's my story. But this sounds like, to be honest, it sounds like everyone.
Well, everyone is going to have these beliefs from somewhere. Some of them come from, like this one, it comes from our father generally, because we see some kind of sucker from the mother, and then we seek approval from the father.
My father was a school principal as well, right. So he knew how to use approval as a tool to get the kids to do the things that he thought kids should be doing.
So I
probably got it like quite powerfully, but I'm thinking, is there anyone who's, do you know anyone who doesn't?
We have to have them, but it's more about if you can acknowledge them and then notice your behavior, then you can kind of overcome them, but you can reroute yourself to a different direction, you know. Yeah. Doesn't need to stop you from achieving what you want in life. And you can change some beliefs if you, you know, like I do some stuff with NLP,
yeah,
where often people have adopted a belief when that, usually before the age of 7, to be honest.
Yes.
When they're in that situation where they're just taking everything in like a sponge. And what happens then is every so often, on a regular basis, they get to re-experience whatever it is. So it could be they get to re-experience being in an abusive relationship. And it's like every 3 years they're in another relationship, which is also abusive. So that might be that they've got a belief that they're unworthy.
Yeah.
Or you know, something like that. Or it could be that, I don't know, what other beliefs they've got, I can't think of another one offhand, but there's lots of things, and they have these regularly occurring situations throughout their life. And so, and usually they've got a story about why they've got this belief. So that now there's something there, and they go, oh, I think it was when I was 10 and I was staying with this friend and this happened and blah, blah. And it's never that. Because if it was that, that already sorted it out.
Yes, yeah, it's too late.
So it's something that's in the unconscious mind that we have to find. Find what the unconscious thing is. And often it's something, it's not something traumatic. It's just something that happened. And I have them kind of review it from a dissociated perspective, like above the event and looking down on it.
Right.
So that they can be objective about it. And looking at it, excuse me, with the wisdom that they have at the age that they are, rather than the 3-year-old or whatever it was.
Yes.
And ask them what was happening then, and what beliefs did they adopt, and what decisions did they make as a result of that, you see. And then they can, if they reevaluate subsequent situations that are similar, it kind of changes everything. And then they just stop having the same thing happen in the future. But, you know, to do that, you have to identify the belief. And it might not be I'm unworthy. It might be something like, it could be I'm not good enough. It could be something a bit more relevant to them. Like, let me think of one. I deserve everything I get. Right? So I deserve everything I get, and it's usually negative, not positive.
Oh, I see, right, yeah. I was thinking, well, that's not so bad.
Yeah, but it usually only applies to negative things.
Yes,
it's usually,
yeah.
I
deserve that.
I deserve everything I get that's negative, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, where did that come from? So they've usually got a story around it, which they've promulgated because, you know, there's nothing else to do rather than try and figure it out for themselves. But it's just a story, and the real cause of it will be lying in their unconscious mind, and it will be there from before they were classed as like an individual, before they were able to be objective about situations.
I also wonder about the effect of, and I know this isn't really, this is after seven, but it's just almost habit forming, the effect of being graded at school, like you're getting graded all the time, and that's about that external validation.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for people who fail, who get fail grades, obviously that's not good for you. Like, you are getting the message that you're not good enough.
Yeah.
But then the people who pass, well, they still get the message they're not good enough either, because there's people who do better than them.
Mm.
And then there's people who did above average, and they're like, well, they still didn't get the prize.
Mm.
You know, they weren't the best in their class.
Mm.
And then the people who were best in the class, they probably didn't get ducks at their school. So only one person got ducks out of that whole lot.
Yeah.
And probably they're one of those high achievers
who has that inbuilt thing that they're unworthy.
So, yeah. Like, no one is winning.
No.
And this scenario that I've just painted, and I know most teachers don't actually want it. They don't teach because they like marking people.
Mm.
It's not what they're there for either. Mm. No one's there for this, but it's just what seems to be happening.
Yeah.
And I know this is after your seven-year thing,
you know.
Yeah, and it's after your seven-year-old thing, but I think it just reinforces it at that point.
Yeah, well, it will, because once you got the belief, then it just keeps reinforcing.
Yeah,
creates your reality. So your beliefs create your reality, which reinforces the belief, and it just keeps going, gets stronger.
And this is what you were saying at the start, because we filter out all the stuff that we've got a part of our brain that filters for us.
Yeah,
and it filters out the stuff it thinks we're not interested in.
Yeah.
And if we're always banging on about how we're useless at stuff, then it's going to filter out all the signs that we're good at things and only show us the signs that we're bad at things.
Exactly.
And then if someone tries to tell you...
But it's just like the ego doing that, you know, the conscious mind doing it. And most of the stuff sits in the unconscious mind. So if you can spot your behaviour, that'll lead you to what the belief is. And then it's kind of like... kind of like shining a light on it, I suppose. But you've still got to monitor it. You've still got to be aware of it if you want to change it.
Is awareness enough, or do you still...
Or if you want to do something different, for example.
Yeah.
If you don't want to keep doing the same thing that you always do, like, for example, if you're always seeking approval from other people and you want to stop doing that, then it's important to notice when you're doing that. Or what are you doing things for? Are you doing things just to get approval from other people, you know.
Well,
and
that
means being really honest with yourself, you know.
The answer to that question could be quite alarming. You could be deep into a career that you're doing for that reason and not for internal reasons.
Exactly. Well, that's what happened in lockdown. So many people were stuck at home and they, you know, with families, and they were challenging everything. They were like, well, why am I doing this blinking job anyway? You know, I go there 5 days a week. I hate it. But because they're just on this kind of treadmill of going, I mean, some people really love the job. You know, I'm not saying everybody was like that, but I saw a lot of clients then who were like, what the hell am I doing with my life? You know, so they challenged the whole life. So in a way, you know, lockdown was quite good because it made people actually think about what they were doing rather than just doing it every day.
And the consequences are now we're like, they can't get bus drivers. They can't get people in all sorts of careers. In America, they call it the Great Resignation.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because I think they've got more and crappier jobs over there.
Right.
And I think a whole lot of people are just like, nah, it's just not worth it anymore.
Mm. Mm.
And that was always going to happen because the working conditions and the pay were always going downhill. But I guess it doesn't. It's not like people slowly drift. Things happen in fits and starts. And we had that big break with the lockdown, like you say, and lots of people have reassessed where their lives are at.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the result, like you're describing.
Mm. And so they, you know, they did get chance, because I think, you know, a lot of the times when people are working, you know, they're up early, they, you know, they maybe got kids to get off to school, they've got to get to work, they're on like a treadmill, they go to work, they do the job, they come home, they cook tea, they watch a couple of hours television, go to bed, rinse and repeat.
And it also just becomes a habit.
Yeah.
This is the first job I've had that's gone for a decade. Never done anything more than 2.5 years. And there's lots of habits I've got here, which are very hard to break now.
Right.
Because it's like wired into my brain.
Right. Well, and some habits, well, a lot of habits are useful because then you
of course, you know, yeah.
But some of the ones that we're talking about may be not that useful.
It takes a serious sort of break from the routine to see it.
So, and so that's what I think lockdown did that for a lot of people. They're questioning, you know, whether they were in the right relationship, whether they're in the right job, whether they wanted to work for themselves. Gave them an opportunity to think about those things rather than, say, usually not having the time because just life, you know.
Yeah.
And things that people have to do on a day-to-day basis.
And there's 35 positions available at our district council at the moment.
35 positions?
Yes.
Do we really need 35 people?
Well, they have a lot more that work there. There's 35 empty positions. They need another 35.
Are you suggesting I go and get a job at the council?
I'm suggesting there's at least 30.
I'm suggesting they probably wouldn't have me.
I'm suggesting there's at least 35 people who were at council who reassessed their situation and they were like, oh, stuff this. I'm out of here.
Right.
Okay. A roading manager left 6 months ago. His replacement is just leaving.
He's just leaving.
Yeah, he's just leaving now. So after six months.
So he's only lasted 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I'll keep.
Or rather, we shouldn't say he's only lasted 6 months. We should say the work environment has only lasted 6 months for him.
Right. Okay.
I think that would be more accurate.
Maybe I could get some consulting work there and find out what the hell's going on.
I think that would be. I would recommend that as a ratepayer.
Yeah. All right. What else have I got? Another belief could be I don't belong. This is one I've got as well.
This is about half the people in Raglan feel like that. That's why we're all out in Raglan.
That's why we're all here.
Yeah.
Seeking identity, trying to belong and ensure they have a place where they belong. You're looking for what's my place, what's my role. Do things so they won't get thrown out. And these people are often very likeable, you know, so they can become part of or instigate a group or a club or even a cult. So this is then somewhere that they can belong, but often that ends up falling apart, and then that just confirms the belief that they don't belong anywhere.
Yeah.
Being hyper vigilant about people, like all those people over there, they're not like us, you know. Or becoming so eccentric that people go, oh my God, steer clear of that person, right?
And so
it's like a preemptive strike.
Is that the self-sabotage thing again? People don't like me, and then you behave in ways that ensure they don't.
Yeah.
And you go, there you go, I was right, and you get the satisfaction of being right.
Or behaving so weird that people don't know how to react around them, so they just kind of, oh, God, there's that person again, let's cross over the road. And then that confirms the belief again, you know?
Yes.
There's quite a few. When there's, and I say there's ones that are very personal. These are kind of more general one. So there's things like I can't trust myself, others, or the world. So that people are seeking kind of sense of viability, a sense of a future, survival, and safety. But what they might do is cheat or be dishonest. Often by not saying what they think rather than lying. So they don't tell you what they're thinking. They avoid telling you what they're thinking rather than actually lying about it. Unconsciously setting other people up to fail and then feeling betrayed.
This is getting a bit depressing, Stephanie.
Always seeking safety before taking action. You know, like if I open my heart to somebody, I'll die or something. Setting up lots of tests for people and things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of weirds people out.
Looking for trustworthy symbols like a guru, a teacher, and then once they've found them, they'll test them to find out where they're unworthy. So they'll be like, oh, this person's the best thing since sliced bread, and then they're like, well, I wonder if they are, and then they'll find something, and then that person will just get wiped, even though they were the best thing since sliced bread, you know, because... Yeah. They don't trust them. People can have things like believing that they're insignificant or invisible, which is a trust thing as well. That they don't have the capacity to do things. or that this is a common one. It's that there is a right way. So we probably all work with people where they go, oh, this is the way you do blah, blah, blah. Yeah. This is the right way. And if you say, well, you know, what about if we did it this way? No, this is the right way. You know, there was a thing on, it was on YouTube or Telegram or something where this mother, she got a roast leg of lamb, right? And every time she put it in the oven, she cut the end off it. And she cut the end off it. And so her daughter says to her one day, she said, why do you always cut the end off it? You know, you're just wasting all that meat. Why do you cut the... And she said, oh, that's why my mother did it. So the daughter said, well, I'm going to ask Grandma. So she says to Grandma, you always cut the end off the leg of lamb. Why did you do that? And she said, oh, well, we had such a small oven, it wouldn't fit if we didn't cut the end off. And so she just got... passed on as like this is what you do with a leg of lamb. You slice half of it off because it won't fit in the oven. But the mother didn't realise that that's why she was doing it. She just carried on doing it.
It's a frightening level of unquestioning behaviour.
I know, exactly. So just an example.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't dwell on that too long. So, all right, so just to give the background again of, because I've always found this interesting and useful piece of information that our brain has a filter in it that filters out, because we get too much information just coming at us and all the time. Has to filter out most stuff just to focus on the stuff that's important to us. And that part of the brain, if we're always talking about how bad we are at things, it'll say, okay, that's what's important to this person. It'll say, we'll show them more evidence.
That's right.
May pay attention to all the things they stuff up and ignore the things that they do well.
Exactly. And that is a key thing, Aaron, is that we get what we focus on.
Yeah.
So if we keep focusing on what we can't do, then we get more of what we can't do. If we can't focus on what we can do, then we get more of what we can do. And so, but often people, you know, like when I'm coaching people, I say, okay, what do you want? And that, you know, like 9 times out of 10, they'll tell me what they don't want.
Yeah.
So they'll go, oh, I don't want it. I don't want this job. Or I don't want this relationship. Or what I really want is not to fail. At this exam, or I don't want to fail. And I go, okay, so that's what you don't want. So already they're telling me what the focus is on, and so I know that that's what I'm going to keep getting because that's what they're focusing on. So even getting people to talk about something that they want in positive language can be a mission, you know, because they'll go, okay, I don't want this relationship. Okay, so you don't want this relationship. What do you want then? Well, I don't want this relationship. Okay, well, if you don't want this, what do you want instead? Well, I want another one. Well, what kind of relationship do you want? Well, I don't want one where we're fighting and arguing. So, again, we're getting what they don't want. And it's so kind of prevalent in society that people focus on what they don't want and then wonder why they keep getting it, because they're reinforcing the beliefs.
I remember when I was in my,
what they do want, you know?
In my 20s, I was probably complaining about my father, and an older guy said to me, you don't want to be like your father. You don't want to be like my father. I said, what do you want to be like? This is really important to know what you do want to be like. Otherwise, you will end up the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I don't mean to bag my father on the radio. He was a good guy. But, you know, we should all be looking to...
you were 20,
in my 20s, I'm not going to... We should all be looking to improve on the previous model anyway, right?
Yeah. Well, I think in the 20s, that's teenagers and 20s, that's when the... kids think that the parents know nothing, you know.
because you're at and you're younger, you think that they're the centre of the universe.
Exactly.
The bringer of all things to your life, which they kind of are.
Exactly. For a while. When you get a bit older, then you think, oh, God, I don't know anything, you know, because you know everything at that age.
I did.
I think they say that it's when you start having children or you're at the age where you can have children yourself that you realise that your parents did have some wisdom.
Yeah, I was a fantastic parent right up until the point where I had kids.
Right.
And I knew a lot.
Having them and reading about them a bit different.
It's very different.
So just going back to beliefs then, it's like these beliefs will be there, and you can, you know, think about your own behaviour, these people that are listening, and what that might say about what belief you have. But then you can always go back and go, okay, so... if that's the belief, that's interesting. And what do I actually want? What do I focus on? And you're focusing on the end result of what it is that you want.
Yeah.
Even sometimes you don't even need to focus too much on the steps. You just want to be focused on what the end result is that you're trying to achieve.
So if you've got someone who comes to you, do you find it reasonably easy to dig down and find out what the belief is? Is that a relatively straightforward process?
Well, it depends. Sometimes it's not interfering with it. I'll tell you that one of the main things is just getting people to say what they actually want in positive language.
Yeah.
And getting them to say, well, what does that look like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like if you're going to have that end result? What is that like? You know, and people in elite sports, they're well schooled at doing this. This has come from NLP as well. It's like if you focus on, I mean, I don't really remember a guy named Greg Louganis. He was a springboard diver.
I do remember his name, yes. Oh, didn't he bang his head?
He did, yeah.
Yeah, that's why we remember him.
That's
terrible way to be remembered, but anyway.
But he was a top springboard diver, and he'd do all these fantastic dives. And that the developers of NLP studied him to figure out how come he was so good. And he said he always visualized the dive before he did it.
Yes, and lots of sports people talk about that.
Yeah, and so and how he'd land in the water, and then you can be quite disoriented. I used to do springboard diving. You can get disoriented when you're in the water. So he just opened his eyes and watched the bubbles and know which way to go up, you know. It sounds ridiculous now, but this is at the time. I think it was in the 80s. I think he got a gold medal in springboard diving.
Yeah.
Anyway, they said to him, what happened when you hit your head on the board? And he said, I visualized a dive. I'd fail the day before.
Right.
And so that's why he did it, you know. So he hits his head on the board, I think. So, you know, even somebody that's experienced like that. And so these are the things now being taught to athletes. Like, what do you want? Okay, I want to win the race. I want to run this race in less than a certain time, you know, and be, and feel good at the end of it. You know, feel tired but feel good at the end of it. And so putting the effort into that end result is really important, and knowing what that is.
I think people, we have a tendency to feel like this is some kind of hocus pocus kind of behaviour, but elite sports people do this all the time.
Exactly.
And you see them, and you see these young guys come into the All Blacks, especially the backs, and they go straight in and they're really young and they just excel in an astonishing way. And it's like their self-belief is just so powerful.
Yeah, exactly.
Really,
there was another one where there was these kids, little girls in England. I think they were about 10 or 11, somewhere that age. And they were doing some work on the high and low bars. So the idea was that they were trying to do a double back somersault off the high bar. So they're swinging round on the high bar and then they have to do a double back somersault. And they were landing, I mean, they've got big mats and everything. They were landing on the face and all sorts of things.
Oh, right.
And there was three or four of them. And the coach went, right, okay, come over here. And he had them visualize success.
Yeah.
They went back on and everyone did it.
Yeah.
So he was
good at what he did, obviously.
Yeah, but all he had him do was visualize what they wanted. So they probably saw one fall off and thought, oh God, that's probably going to happen to me. And so then, of course, the mind went, yeah, okay, that's what you want. Let's organize that.
You probably don't follow the cricket, but there's a thing that happened with the former New Zealand captain Brendan McCullum, who his players always said he was really good at making them feel good about themselves.
Right.
And the New Zealand cricket team's done pretty well from his influence as well as other reasons, but he recently took over coaching the England team, and they went from being these serial losers who were down in the dumps and just kept losing at times they shouldn't, to just not only just winning, but winning in this incredibly flamboyant, fun, absolutely unstoppable way, inspiring way. And again, the players all say he makes them feel just fantastic about, feel 6 foot tall. Well, no, they're that short of that.
6 foot tall and bulletproof.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, you know, whatever those cliches are, like they really feel that. And he seems to have this ability to make people really believe in themselves.
Yeah.
And so many of us are like, oh, well, it wouldn't be accurate to say that you're the best team in the world. You know, to come in and just say, I believe you guys are the best in the world. That wouldn't be true. But his belief was so powerful that actually it is now true.
Mm. Yeah. And that's also about the state that they're in. So if you're in a good state, you know, emotional state, physical emotional state, I'm using that term kind of loosely. In other words, you're feeling good, you're upbeat, then you probably notice that things go better when you're out and about. So if you're in a good state and you've got a good visualization about what you want, then it's gonna work out. And the beliefs are kind of secondary. They can trip you up, but if you start to be aware of them, start up to be aware of your behaviour, then they're not going to do that, because you'll be going, okay, I spot you now, and this is my end result that I'm focusing on. And, you know, I'm in a good state doing it. And that makes so much difference.
I find it so hard to step away from that thing about being accurate. We've got to, everything's
got
to
be right.
Yeah, well, I guess so. Yeah, I do. I have to get it right. I guess that's one of my beliefs. I have to get it right.
Mm.
And I have to be accurate about things.
Right.
And tell it like it really is. Not in that I'm telling it like it is kind of thing.
Right.
But
yeah.
And that, I think that gets in the way of creating beliefs for a future where things are different, I would say.
Well, I think that the other thing is the tendency to focus on the negative. Like, you know, as I say, I've just moved, I haven't got television, I haven't watched the news for nearly 3 years now.
That's good,
isn't it? Propaganda, anyway.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but mass media like that can create negativity, and people start seeing doom and gloom everywhere.
I don't think people realise just how strong this is. Because, and this is my like big thing I'm banging on about at the moment. I spent 20 years trying to get real news, accurate news.
Yeah.
But I realised in the last few years, but I'm still delivering overall a negative message.
Mm.
And the world is not all negative. In fact, look out. If I rang all the people on my cell phone, look out your window, anything bad happening out there, they'd probably all say no.
Mm.
You know?
But you see, if you keep watching, like I say to people, if you only ever watch the news, if that's the only thing you ever watched. Some people do. They have it on 24 hours.
Oh,
you'd be frightened to go out the front door, you know.
Well, but they are. You know, a lot of people are.
Yeah, and because it's changing those beliefs, and it's changing their perception of what's real.
Or they say things like, oh, it's a terrible world. You hear people say that, oh, it's a terrible world out there. And this is considered a normal thing to say. And it's just not accurate at all. And here I'm saying about accuracy, like the
But you see, the thing is that if they've got that belief, then that's what they're looking for. So that over the years, they keep reinforcing that, and then they go, oh, yeah, it's a terrible world. And then they look at it and go, oh, yeah, you know, well, I don't know, can I see anything out there that's terrible? And you have a look.
Well, I know, like if we pointed
out. Oh, yeah, there's a bird sitting on that thing. He's probably shitting down the side of it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, well, there's one thing, but look at the sun shining. There's not a cloud in the sky. There's people out there. You know, shopping, walking around, and living their lives, and then I can focus on that one thing, that minor system,
yeah,
on the thing there. You know?
I know, and I could point to the mountain and say, look, there's a thriving ecosystem on that mountain.
Yeah.
And people, I know they'd say, well, it's only there, like all around it is farmland, or in that mountain there's some endangered species. And I'm like, the point is you're really having to reach for something out of all that goodness to find something bad to justify.
We are, but somebody else wouldn't. They wouldn't even see that other stuff. They'd just look at, because that's what their belief is.
Yeah.
And then that creates their reality, which creates a belief, and it's just this
ever-decreasing
circle.
I have this real almost concern these days about the effect that the news does have.
Oh, yeah, me
too. And making most of us feel like the world is a bad place.
Mm.
And I think a lot of it comes from that.
And then, of course, we have a mass of people all focusing on the negative, which doesn't do the world any good. If we're constantly focusing on what's going wrong, we need to be focused on what we can do to improve things and how we're going to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I like to do now.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because there's this ecosystem of news gathering that brings you all the negative stuff.
Yeah.
It's almost like a conspiracy.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a joking way. All news, whether it be mainstream news or fringe left or fringe right,
it's
all bringing negative stuff to us, and it's misleading us about the nature of existence in a way.
Mm.
That's what I think now, really.
Yeah.
So
I think, anyway, that's about beliefs. Can I give a plug for my NLP practitioner training starting on the 20th of October in Raglan? So we've got 3 6-day blocks to become an internationally recognised NLP practitioner.
So this is the full thing?
This is the full thing, yeah. So
yeah.
People can just do the first block if they want to, and then, you know, pay for the others after, because they'll want to do the whole three. And it's for anybody that wants to get some more self-awareness, who wants to develop relationships, who wants to help other people. It's not just for people who want to help others. Though, a lot of people just do it for their own personal development. So if they go to insideyourmind.com, they'll see NLP practitioner training. They can pay upfront or they can pay in installments. They can ring me, 021-684-395, have a chat.
Yep.
I'm not a hard salesperson. It's like I'll just tell them what we're going to do, and if they want to do it, they'll do it, and if they don't, then they don't. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I'd love to have some more people from Raglan on it, because often I get people from all around the country and sometimes there's nobody from Raglan on it.
It's a small market, Stephanie. It's a small market.
Well, that's a belief, you see.
Oh, okay.
There's 5 million people in New Zealand, and there's probably only a few thousand that have done, or maybe, I don't know how many thousand have done it already, not with me, but generally.
Yeah.
So that's quite a big market.
Fair enough. After the discussion we've had, I'm definitely not arguing with you about that. and this thing about beliefs, this will be a component of what you do as
presume. Absolutely.
Okay, folks. So, insideyourmind.com, that's the website anyway to find out. And you've probably got you've got articles about this, no doubt, as well.
Yeah, well, and I'll put this up there too.
This podcast.
Cool.
All right. Thanks for coming in, Stephanie.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right, folks. That is the end of the show for the day. Hope you've enjoyed it. I'll be back again tomorrow morning.